And we're back on Fictional Frontiers. I'm your host, Sohei Bawan. Each week here on Fictional Frontiers, we cover the most noteworthy in genre entertainment, primarily film, but we'll dabble in television, comic books, video games. It's all kind of transmedia-centric at the end of the day. And that's the nature of pop culture in modern times. There are not that many dividing lines. You'll see one project developed in one area through one vehicle or medium, and then you'll find it explored or mined in another area. And that's what's kind of exciting and fun, but at the same time can be overwhelming at times. And over the last couple of weeks, we've looked back and discussed how a lot of the projects we're seeing today are the result of people from my generation, I guess, if you will, from the 80s and 90s when they were kids. When they were 5 to 10 years old, they were in, or they were enjoying films from the 80s and 90s, those projects from that time. They're now in positions of power and authority in Hollywood. And now they have the car's keys to dad's car, if you will. And they're going to drive where they want. They're going to go wherever they want, however they want. And also in connection with that is the desire for their kids to kind of enjoy, embrace what they grew up with. And we've all done that. If you have kids, you buy the things that you loved when you were a kid, and you try to introduce those things to them. It can be a Star Wars figure, or it can be a baseball or basketball. It doesn't matter. And sometimes it's both, right? Your kid or your nephew, niece, your young one may or may not enjoy it, may or may not embrace it. They may go their own path, but at the end of the day, that's the hope. And I'm always of the bent, or I'm convinced that a lot of the projects, a lot of the stories that we embrace, enjoy, imbibe, however you want to put it, are the result of marketing and huge campaigns designed to excite people in one way, form, or fashion. And it's not necessarily the story that's really bringing people in. It's the ubiquity of the content that's being forced down people's throats, if you will, or at least the out of sight, out of mind is not really an issue. I'll just put it that way. Basically, there's this notion or idea that if you keep reminding people about a certain project, or if it becomes something that's everywhere at all times, as far as merchandising, licensing, commercials, and the like, eventually people will be convinced that it's something they should like, or at least enough of them will, and then the herd will go along with them. And there are so many marketing studies. There are so many companies whose focus is all about that. So we talked about this notion that it's not necessarily the content. It's more about who is running things at the highest levels, right? This past weekend saw the release of Godzilla, X Kong, The New Empire. I don't know why they chose Godzilla X Kong instead of Godzilla and Kong, The New Empire. But nonetheless, it's part of Legendary's MonsterVerse series. It's the fifth film in this series. And it's very interesting because, you know, the first Godzilla in this franchise, which is basically an American iteration of the classic Japanese character, did pretty well. People were excited. It wasn't a huge behemoth, pardon the pun, blockbuster. Then there was the sequel to that, which introduced Rodan and Mothra, and of course King Ghidorah. And visually, there are parts of that film which are just incredibly stunning. Nonetheless, it didn't do as well as maybe some thought it would, but still it did pretty well. Then you had Kong Skull Island, which was a runaway success. And then the last film before this one had Kong and Godzilla face off for the first time. Godzilla versus Kong, or Kong versus Godzilla. I always remember, or forget, excuse me. I remember the original, but I forget the title of this version. I know it was an inversion of, excuse me, the original Toho film. And so plans were underway after the incredible success of that film, because it did very, very well. And this was during the height of the pandemic, or basically people going back. It was, in many respects, one of the films that actually, quote unquote, saved Hollywood, or saved the cinema going experience here in the States, because people didn't think it was going to do anywhere near as well as it did. But it did boffo box office numbers, all things considered. And so what is Hollywood going to do in times like this? Well, it's going to follow the, you know, tried and tested approach to things versus going off script. And so enough people from the creative circles and the accounting circles were convinced that another film needed to be made in this franchise. And that leads us to Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. I'm always going to flip the two, so my apologies again for that. And maybe it's because in the back of my mind, I know that there are fans of Godzilla and there are fans of Kong, and I don't want to give preference over another. It's kind of akin to the way Vin Diesel and The Rock dealt with the filming of their action sequences, right? In any of the sequences, in any of the films, the Fast and the Furious films, where they were fighting against each other or dealing with an adversary, their agents actually, if I'm not mistaken, counted how many times they were in defensive positions versus offensive positions, because they wanted to make certain that that number was exactly the same for both of them, right? One of them couldn't outshine the other. And so maybe in the back of my mind, I'm thinking about that with Godzilla and Kong as well. But nonetheless, it was called, or is called, Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. The original expectations for this film this weekend were that it was going to do, you know, maybe 50 million, 55 million. Those were the projections. It stomped all over those expectations, pardon the pun. And I'm taking that pun from Deadline, so it's not my pun. I have to give credit where credit's due. $80 million opening weekend for Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. That is just insanely huge for this franchise. It's insanely huge for any franchise, to be honest with you. And if you look at the numbers across the board, globally, 175 million global bow. That is a massive number. A massive number. Now, I'm going to talk about the film in a second. I'm going to talk about why the film, I feel, is doing well, contrary to the 52-53% positive rating, which would categorize it as a rotten film according to Rotten Tomatoes. And it all goes to basically what I see with the cinema score, which is an A-, okay? Now, an A- is a pretty good score for a cinema score. Cinema scores are taken right out of the theater first weekend, and usually people say you need to get an A or an A- in order to have something that's going to do well, that's going to be embraced, because the people who typically go and see these movies the first weekend are the ones who really want to see that film. And because they really want to see that film, they are an invested audience, right? They're going to enjoy the film no matter what. They will find the diamonds in the proverbial rough, if you will. I still remember going to see Star Wars The Phantom Menace in, I guess it was, you know, it was well over, was it 1999? Yeah, 1999. The midnight screening of Star Wars The Phantom Menace. Now, it was an experience unlike any other, and I don't think we will be able to replicate that for a very, very long time. Because, you know, midnight screenings had never really been held except for classics like, you know, Rocky Horror Picture Show or something like that, which is one of the most horrible experiences of my life. I actually went to see that film back in the day, and I left before the movie was a third of the way through. It was horrible. But nonetheless, I digress. People went to see films like that at midnight. But this was the first time, or one of the first times, where you had a film that was so anticipated that people wanted to see it immediately, right away. They didn't want to wait for spoilers. They were afraid that they were going to have their fun ruined by whispers and media outlets and radio heads, all of that. And I remember watching that film, and look, I still really enjoy The Phantom Menace, okay? But if I'm objectively looking at the film from a critical perspective, script-wise, dialogue-wise, you know, maybe pace, there are a lot of problems with that film. A lot of problems. A lot of really good things as well. But I convinced myself that that film was incredible that first weekend, okay? It's not an incredible film. There are incredible elements in that film. There are things which still stand the test of time, which are iconic now. But nonetheless, I convinced myself that that film was better than what it was. And so if a cinema score were given that night, it probably would have been B plus A minus, most likely an A minus, maybe even an A, given the love of Star Wars fans and the fact that it was the first Star Wars film in so many years. So when you have an A minus score, it can be argued that the reason that score is as high as it is because you have Godzilla fans, you have Kong fans, and they're going to love anything no matter what. And I think that's actually the point that I'm getting at here with a film like Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. Because the reality of the situation is this. You have Godzilla minus one, which is actually more or less about survivor's guilt, is really in many respects what that film is about. And Godzilla is the MacGuffin, is the vehicle by which that difficulty is explored. You know, the mental hurdles, the emotional challenges that one has to overcome in order to live, in order to move on. It could have been a tornado. It could have been an alien invasion. It could have been anything. It could have been a military operation, anything where there was a loss of life and someone survived. It could have been anything in that vein that would have allowed someone, a filmmaker, to address this. In this case, it was Godzilla, okay? And that's why that film was so much embraced by so many people. Yes, the visual effects were first class. It won an Oscar for visual effects, which allows that film to continue to be noted as an Oscar-winning film. But it was in many, many critics' top 10 lists, mainly because of that, mainly because of that notion or that element, if you will. But most Godzilla films, I mean, there are exceptions to the rule. The original Godzilla being another one, which dealt with the atomic energy crisis, or, you know, some of the notions tied to what Oppenheimer tried to address, which is more than just with great power comes great responsibility. There's this notion that certain things should not be messed with from a balanced global, societal, environmental, technological perspective, that certain balances should be left as they are, and what is unleashed on the world when hubris comes into play. Okay? Godzilla kind of addressed that to some degree, the original film. But if you look at most of the franchise, that's where you get this image in your mind of two guys dressed in costumes where you can kind of see the zippers down their backs, because that's how they get into the costumes, at least back in the day, rolling around model cities, crushing everything in sight. That's kind of the stereotype associated with Godzilla films. And if you look at the Godzilla franchises as a whole, particularly what's called the Showa era, okay? The Showa era was basically, or is connected to, Emperor Showa. That's, that series of films is probably, you know, from about 1954 to say 1975, the bulk of the Godzilla films in that era. And if you go back and watch those films, and Criterion has done an amazing job with, if you're still into physical media, a collection of those films from that era. It's all Godzilla versus this, Godzilla versus that, Godzilla meets this, destroy all monsters, brings them all together. It's basically a film that only exists to allow for this conflict to happen on the screen between these kaiju, okay, these giant monsters. Jet Jaguar being the exception, you know. He's not a kaiju, but he's a giant robot. Those films are all about the fighting, okay? They're all about those moments, those sequences, which allow kids to just see two giant creatures fighting. And I think at some level, even adults still kind of enjoy that because it harkens back to what they used to do when they were kids, you know, wrestling, fighting, snowball fighting battles, running through the woods, pretending that you're some type of hero, and then, you know, maybe pulling out a stick from the ground if a tree branch falls down and pretending it's a lightsaber. There's all these different things where it's basically kids pretending that they're fighting against some evil or some villain or some adversary. And I remember back in the day, my brother and I, we used to pretend that we were either Godzilla or Kong and we would wrestle. So there's all of that built into this type of story and franchise. And if you look at the original MonsterVerse films, you'll see that the original MonsterVerse films try to make things a little bit more serious. There is an element of seriousness to the first film. Again, there's some issues of survivor's guilt. There's this world building that comes into play here, which is trying to explain why these monsters exist, how they exist, and what we're going to do about it, who's using them. All of that stuff comes into play. There are ecological issues addressed in the MonsterVerse films. All of that's in there. And you have, you know, some pretty talented actors in the Godzilla films. You know, you have many actors in these films that are chewing scenery, as they say. Bryan Cranston, I still remember when the first trailer for the first MonsterVerse Godzilla film came out. It was an incredible trailer, but it's him lamenting the fact that people are not recognizing that there is a danger coming, an evil coming. I don't know if it's an evil, but a danger coming, and that we're not prepared for it. And the fear in his voice, it sold me on that as an adult. But at the end of the day, the Godzilla films are all about that mishmash of fighting. You know, basically scenes of human beings running around, explaining what's happening, what they're going to do about it, sandwiched around carnage is what it's all about. And I'll tell you one of my experiences back in the day. Now, younger listeners may not remember this. They probably don't. They definitely won't. Back in the day, TBS, which was owned by Ted Turner, the precursor to TNT. I don't know if TBS still exists in some iteration or form. I have to take a look at that. But nonetheless, TBS was a network owned by Ted Turner. And what he did smartly in building his brand, or building that brand, was take these Showa films, okay, or these kaiju films from Japan, from Toho, not just with Godzilla. Some of them were outside of the Godzilla universe, if you will, like War of the Gargantuas, which to this day Brad Pitt still says is one of his favorite movies. Check it out. It's really interesting if you have siblings. It's about two brothers who are monsters fighting to the death, basically. So War of the Gargantuas, check that out. Anyway, I remember back in the day that those films would be shown late at night, okay? Way beyond most people's bedtimes. Now, there were probably kids out there whose parents allowed them to stay up, or maybe they didn't really go to bed at 9. They kind of sneaked downstairs and watched whatever was on. My parents were not like that. And to be honest with you, I was probably more on the nerdish side. And so for me, I really got tired around 9, 10 o'clock at night. So I end up just basically going to sleep, missing all these films. So my father knew I wanted to see these battles, these scenes, these movies. So what did he do? He set up the VCR, the video cassette recorder. And if you don't know what a cassette is, take a look at it online. Just Google VCR. It was a way to record what was on television, but actually use tape instead of discs. having to walk through all this. Maybe not necessary now that there's Google and all that's available, but it was like a brick, basically. You put into a machine and it would record what you wanted to record. And you would stop recording and start recording by pushing a button, basically. So my father, and he was a dedicated father, would watch these films. But what he did was that he went and only recorded the fights between the monsters. Okay, he did not record any of the human interactions or discussions, maybe few of them. Okay, sometimes he would leave it going because the cuts were too close and you just had to have them in the scene, you know. But if there were extended periods of time where maybe there's a meeting, a discussion where they're trying to plan what they're going to do to take care of this monster, this kaiju, he would cut that out. Okay, now I would watch those recordings again and again and again, and I love them. I thought that's what a kaiju film or a Showa Godzilla film was. It was just a bunch of fights. I can't tell you how many times my friends and I would just come back after school and then put that tape in and watch those fights. You know, most of the fights, if you added them all up, ended up being about 10, 15 minutes max of content. So I thought that's what a Godzilla film was, okay? But years later, when I went back to watch those films again, because, you know, you want to see crisp, clean copies to see if, you know, the experience is going to be the same. It's nostalgia laden. I didn't realize how much of those films spent time with the humans, so much so that I would argue that most of the films spent the bulk of their time with these human characters. And it was basically actors who were very serious, very sullen, laden with fear, who were trying to address how to deal with these monsters, okay? And you had great actors. Many of Japan's best actors were in these films. The lead actor from Ikaru was in one of the Godzilla, for many of the Godzilla films. And his role in these films was basically expressions of shock, you know, running up a hill and seeing monsters fighting in a valley beneath them, and then just, oh, you know, as the ground shakes. That was all it was for them. Godzilla X Kong, the new empire, is in the spirit of all that, okay? And I would argue it's probably closest in spirit in many respects to what you see with a film like Godzilla versus Megalon. There's a scene in Godzilla versus Megalon in which Jet Jaguar, one of the giant robots, takes one of the villainous kaiju, Gigan, pins his arms behind his back, okay, so he can't move. And Godzilla runs back. You just have to Google and watch this. Look on YouTube. It's definitely there. He runs about, I don't know, the equivalent of probably, let's just say 50 feet in monster length. At least on the set, it's probably about, let's say, 20 feet on the set that they were on. He runs back, and then he starts running towards the pinned monster, and he jumps back and starts sliding on his tail and kicking this monster in the stomach, okay, who's having his arms pinned back. That kind of sums up the absence of physics, logic, reasoning that came into those films. But at the time, you thought it was one of the best things you'd ever seen, okay? And that is in this film, Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. All of the scenes with the human characters, you know, there's a seriousness there. You're, you know, wanting to get through all these moments. You're like, okay, enough is enough. I want to get to the fights. But it's all set up for these insane battles, these insane scenes where kaiju are going against each other with new powers and new abilities. And now we have the modern technology to pull off things that were not possible back in the day. So you see even crazier things. I'm not going to spoil anything, but you see even crazier things in this film than you've probably ever seen in any Godzilla film, ever. Is it insane? Yes. Is it crazy? No doubt. Does it make any sense at all? No. Are the human characters those you really don't care about to the to any degree? Yes. Do you want those scenes with them to hurry up and just, you know, move on? Let's fast forward, if you will. Yes. And that is what the kids back in the day, and like myself, had to experience or did experience with the Showa films. And that's what we have come to expect from projects like this. So the film critics, again, like I said, there's a disconnect between film critics and mainstream audiences. You know, the film critics themselves, they liken themselves to the safeguarders or the protectors of film as art. And so they can never, ever say that they thought a particular film like this was fantastic, because, you know, they have to honor films that celebrate deviance and things that are odd and weird and strange, which you could also argue have no logical basis, but they're art because they're directed by certain people in a particular fashion with a sprinkling of tonal nuance from a storytelling perspective. Those films can be embraced. But something that's as zany and maniacal as a Godzilla film, no, no, we can't say that. Although I will say the late Roger Ebert, he said one of his favorite films, if I'm not mistaken, was Inframan, which was a kaiju basically centered film. It was a film, well, actually I would say it was more like a Power Rangers or Ultraman centric film. There were kaiju in there, but it's basically a superhero slash cyborg fighting against monsters in costumes, Japanese or not, in this case, not. It was basically the Shaw Brothers version of the Showa films is what it was. And he said it was one of the most fun times he had in film in recent times. That's what these films offer. So I'm not surprised by the box office totals. People are looking for spectacle. They're looking for escapism. They're looking for a return to what they used to love back in the day. And this film offers all that. Is it crazy? Yes. But again, look at who you are and look at who your kids are. Okay? Don't look at the film through your lenses. Look at the film through or by the perspective of the people it's targeting, which are kids like us who grew up with those Showa films back in the 70s and 80s. And I'm telling you, that's why these films have done well. And that's why parents want to take their kids to these films, because they're not looking for substance when it comes to storytelling. They're looking for escapism. And escapism in its own right, with its madness and craziness, look, film is fiction anyway. Almost all of film is fiction. There's a place for this, and it should be celebrated. It should be enjoyed. And because of the success of this film, we're likely going to see more of this. Maybe even with the Marvel films, maybe even with the superhero franchises, you're going to see more of these films that celebrate what it means to be a child. And for those of you who have forgotten, maybe it'll be a way or means to remind you what that all is, what that means, and what you're missing now. You're listening to Fictional Frontiers. We'll catch you next week.